This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to the practical business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi, Richard.
Nice to have you with us. Also staying on from the previous show, we have Kevin Govender of Ideation Advisory. Thank you, Kevin, for sticking with us, as well as joining us, Leandi Streeter, a business coach and guide from Raise Corp. Sorry, Leandi.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Good to have you with us. Joining us as a guest in studio is an interesting gentleman by the name of Gordon Tobogo. Gordon, yeah. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Gordon is a founder of Tractor. Now, this is a very interesting new age fintech solution that I've had the opportunity to have some exposure to. It's actually a sales management tool for FMCGs that want to sell or market their brands into the informal market. You may call it the traditional spaza shop market. Yep. You may call it a few other things, but it was. I've had a look at, and you guys are, as I understand it, you're in the kind of launching phases of Tractor.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about Tractor. What is it? What does it do? Give us a little bit of background so people understand what it is.
Okay. Tractor is a sales management tool, like you've said. We want to bridge the divide between fast-moving consumer goods companies and the spaza shop market, which is largely informal. And we noticed the gap because we had an experience where we had to go buy bread at the store. This was a while back. I'm sure it was 2 years ago. And we realized that that's when we picked up the problem. A truck was full of bread and at around about 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and the truck owner was trying to sell the bread to the spaza shop owner. But it happened that the sale did not go through because he was late. And we realized then that there was a problem with the procurement systems, number one, and there aren't any formal mechanisms to do sales for these big companies. And that is where the idea was born from, picking up that problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just explain to us what the app does.
Well, it's a website.
Okay.
So currently the version that we have, you're able to register stores on the system. Well, you're able to get information from the store owner, their buying patterns, and the location. Once you have that, then we are able to then on-sell products to the store owner through our system. Right, mm-hmm. At bargain price. Sometimes the deals will be coming from the manufacturers themselves. Sometimes it will be coming from distributors. And then we're able to also help the shop owner to book logistics on the app and get his goods there without having to leave the store. Mm. Yeah.
So I was going to say, I think for me, and in the previous show, we talked about the whole question of ownership versus access. And yeah. For me, as a business owner, and the reason why I was so interested in this is I know and have seen firsthand the pain that is experienced in that township typical spaza shop type of market, where the person, they're running the store, and if they're not there, the store's not running.
Yeah.
So it's a case of, well, if I have to pack my bags and go and buy stock, I'm closing the shop and I'm leaving. So if I need to be running my store, you know, during certain hours or want it open certain hours, that means I have to go and find my supply outside of my normal shop hours,
yeah.
Which means I'm shopping, let's call it, at less than viable hours. I'm perhaps shopping in environments that are less than viable from an economics perspective in terms of discounts and low prices, etc. Those sort of environments are not often open at the right times for me. And so this becomes a little bit of a vicious cycle because I'm not buying efficiently as a spaza owner. I'm therefore not able to price efficiently, and then I'm not able to provide a very effective service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look at this and I go, oh, okay, great. So I see a huge opportunity here, because effectively what you're doing is you're giving the spaza shop owner, we're skipping the ownership leg, you know. We don't have to own the truck that's going to the warehouse or whatever, or the, yeah, or own the person or employ the person that's going to, yeah, go and do my buying. I'm not just going to use my website to do my procurement, have the logistics happen, and here it comes, point. So effectively, you've created an access mechanism for that spaza shop owner, which I think fundamentally, to what we were talking about in the earlier show, shifts the ability of the business to actually actually do business. Right. Now, Kevin, I mean, this is the type of stuff that you you were really excited about with your research. I mean, how does this, you know, model work in your mind? Does this address the South African need that you saw in your research?
Yes, definitely. I think if you look at it, I spoke earlier about you want to collaborate and compete. Mm-hmm. So you find with the spaza shops, initially what happens is the owner, as you mentioned, is responsible for everything, for running the business, doing the procurement, trying to juggle all these things while trying to run that shop as an independent person. So with this ability, with the tractor capability, it gives them an opportunity to partner, to collaborate with companies out there, innovative companies that have brought these capabilities that allows them to be permanently based in the shop, be able to provide that service, you know, round the clock, be able to generate more sales because you are present, but at the same time have the ability to have a company out there that they can partner that will bring what they require, but also give them the ability to generate a view of what their buying and spending patterns are, which will allow them eventually to be able to do this on a regular basis, but also hopefully generate some discounts and economic order quantities from actually the way they buy these things. So it's all win for them.
Well, I mean, I can say, having engaged with the team from Procter & Gamble a few years back, around some of the challenges that they have in the procurement and logistics environment, they want to support these types of initiatives, yeah, and types of businesses. They want to be working with the spaza shop owners and the guys at the coalface. But the challenge they have is they often just can't get there because the nature of their business is it's large, and it moves at a certain pace and it moves in a certain way. And logistically, I mean, you can sometimes imagine trying to get one of their big trucks into a township environment to get the delivery to happen is just not even a start, and never mind, you know, just from a pure practicality. So I think, you know, your concept. Now, how do you solve the logistical element? Talk to us about that for a moment.
Yeah, well, with the logistics part of the website or the business, we've partnered with a local startup called Dropper, which is part of the Meantime Jobs initiative. Mm-hmm. And they help us with the logistics. They have access to, 40 panel vans that are 20 in the city of Tshwane and 20 in the city of Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. So it makes life easier for us.
Okay. So everything is shared economy.
Yeah, it's a shared economy. You know, they are able to do what they're good at, and we're able to get the sales in.
I think there's a very important. So you're also part of the
Meantime Jobs, ecosystem.
This is an ecosystem run by Ian Wright and his team.
Yeah,
that help entrepreneurs engage and create ecosystems. Okay, and you can see that ecosystem working here very efficiently.
Yeah,
it's also really important that people realize that they don't have to be good at everything in the value chain. I mean, you guys are clearly going, well, hold on a second, we can outsource this to these guys that we've met and know, and that works. They can focus on running Dropper, if I'm right. Dropper. They can focus on running Dropper. We'll focus on running Tractor.
Yeah.
And the combined effort will get us an executed delivery. And yes, you do run a little bit of risk in the form of your delivery is dependent on them, but they run the same risk of, if they don't have you, their business is going to suffer a volume crunch.
Yeah.
So it's a mutually, you know, what I always call it, you know, like mutually secured success.
Yeah.
Or destruction if it doesn't work. No, but you know, it's no different to working in any company where one department has to work with the other. You know, you have to interact with each other and know what's going to work and what isn't working.
Yeah, we looked at it from a point where we wanted to go to market as soon as possible and test the solution, and that's when we actually made the collaboration with Dropper, and they're also serious about their business and we're serious about ours. So we just really trying to make it happen together as startups.
Okay.
You also find there's two business models coming together. There's the traditional business model and there's the disruptive business model. And these two become, as you mentioned, mutually exclusive. They start working with each other. At the same time, you know, you're sharing the revenue that's coming through this process, but it's actually bringing efficiency to both parties.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely the 1+1=3 scenario.
So I have a question. I'm very interested in how so the adoption rate within the township with the spaza shops. How's that? How did you introduce this to the communities, and how are they seeing value in this? And because therein lies, I mean, it's a great solution, but it doesn't. It's not going to, you know, achieve that grand vision unless there's adoption and understanding and integration, and the two parts actually come together.
Yeah. Well, when we started registering the stores, we're sitting at over 100 stores right now and counting. So when we're on the ground actually dealing with the shop owners themselves, some don't understand technology. Mm. Some do or have adopted technology, and they have smartphones. And we've realized that there's four kinds of there's two kinds of shop owners. There's the one that uses a feature phone, and there's the one that uses a smartphone. And normally you'd find all the guys from Ethiopia, Somalia, and Pakistan, though they use smartphones. They understand technology. So the adoption from them is huge. We have more of those guys on our system.
Do you treat them as your clients as well?
Yeah. Oh, wow. They're spaza shop owners. We're not trying to divide the segment of the market. Okay. Yeah. And then with the with the South African guys, it's been slow. It takes time. You spend about 15 minutes in the spaza shop trying to get this person's information and explain the system to them. But when you get to a different shop owner, which is more often foreign, it's a quick process. 5 minutes, you're in and you're out.
Wow, that change thing, hey? Comes up over and over.
Yeah, change. Yeah. We're gonna be doing a show on change in the next probably 2 weeks or so, because I tell you, it's a challenge for every business to manage the moving targets and the moving technology platform.
The owner.
Now, I mean, it's a tough economic environment out there. It's not, you know, a walk in the park for anybody.
Yeah.
How do you? I mean, this clearly helps the spaza shop owner grow their business.
Yeah.
It helps the FMCG environment grow, through the volumes that you're moving.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some stats, if I'm not mistaken, how many spaza shop owners do you have now on the system?
Well, we're well over 100.
Well over 100?
So your economies of scale are starting to kick in now.
Yeah, it's starting to kick in. I mean, there's, from the data that we have access to, there's over, 20,000 in Gauteng alone. So it's 20,000 spaza shops in Gauteng alone over.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge spectrum for growth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, your research shows that the average turnover of a spaza shop is about 27,000 rand a month.
A month, yeah.
Now that's a sizable number for an FMCG environment to look at and go, okay, I want a slice of that action.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if I look at where the FMCG world is, they are stuck with the traditional, let's call it retail markets via their wholesalers that they're stuck with.
Right.
Very, traditional margins, for lack of a better word, where those margins are there and they're under price pressure.
Yeah.
You're seeing costs of distribution in those environments growing. So, you know, rents are going up, rates and taxes on property in warehousing as well as retail space is going up, staff costs are growing. So constant pressure on the margins is there.
Yeah.
And for them to then be able to access a spaza shop market that has got a different cost infrastructure and obviously a very different margin capability is obviously quite attractive to them.
Yeah.
What are the FMCG companies saying to you? What are they seeing?
Well, the adoption from the big guys, it's been very slow.
Okay.
But we slowly just navigating the B2B sales, trying to get a deal, trying to do a pilot, but it's been very slow. Though with the smaller wholesalers, life has been a bit easy, you know, for us. You know, they easy, they willing to partner.
Because the wholesaler is slightly closer to the market, they understand the importance.
Mm.
The guys sitting a little bit further away in their office towers in Sandton probably don't see the market as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting though that if they were to do the volume times margin calculation and the numbers involved, they would very quickly wake up to the size of the market and its attractiveness. And particularly if they were an FMCG in a particular industry vertical that they could effectively lock out and get some sort of exclusivity. I mean, if you're the exclusive provider in the, you know, in the detergent space on a particular, you know, into a particular environment or province or something like that, you could make some significant inroads in that space in terms of market share.
You also find that, I was reading your profile, and you also look at different vehicle sizes. So this gives the spaza shop an ability to reduce their cost by if they're a fairly recent spaza shop or the volumes are very small, they can go for a smaller vehicle. So it actually, from economies of scale, it allows them that saving as well.
Yeah.
But if you look at from the FMCG market, this is an opportunity, as Richard said, it's an opportunity for them to lock down more customers, or part of the customer or strategy is to get new customers. Because you will find that these spaza shops probably find the nearest place to go and buy these items, even they're more expensive, because as you mentioned, they need to be at their shop.
Yeah, it's all about time of travel. I'm a spaza shop owner in Alex.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the nearest wholesale point that can get me that item, and it's not necessarily the cheapest.
It's also cost.
And transport costs to and from. Now, just out of interest, I mean, you guys, you're doing independent energy drinks at the moment. One of the things you're focusing on.
Yeah, focusing on the smaller guys. Yeah.
And how's that going? What's that showing you in terms of traction and concept?
Yeah, the spaza shop owners still want the big brands. You know, they still want the big brands because consumers, when they walk in, they want that well known energy drink, you know, but they're buying in small volumes with the smaller or the new entrants in the energy drink space.
Yeah.
They're buying in very small, very very small volumes.
This is one of those sad stories of the big guys are wanted by the consumer, and yet won't support the chain that allows the right people or the potential people to address the market.
I suppose it's also the big guys became big guys because they spent time in the market.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you're just gonna have to do your dues now.
Yeah, we gonna have to do that, but you know, at the end of the day, the owner of the brand has to really create marketing strategies to speak to consumers that they want to be loyal to their brand.
Well, hopefully it's shows like this that people listen to and think about, and the people at in the FMCG space, I challenge them to say, you know, how do they get involved and engaged in addressing the market? And the reality is, they're not doing this for love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a market. It's got a margin on it.
Yeah.
And if the numbers make sense, well, great, let's make this happen. And if the numbers don't, well, they need to tell you the numbers don't work, Gordon, and then say, thanks very much, we're not in play with you.
Yeah.
I think often the answer of no is flowing not from the numbers don't work, but it's just too much effort. It changes the way we do business, and we don't like change because we're a big corporate, so we'd rather not do this.
Uh-huh.
And as we learned from our previous show, you know, if you were the video store owner or the producer of the DVD, you thought you had it sorted until somebody changed your world for you. and access over ownership arrived, yeah. And the next minute, you know, your life has changed fundamentally. And FMCG could find themselves very much in the same space with a different market strategy. So, yeah, they mustn't get too complacent thinking that their big wholesaler distribution strategy is the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
Warning to the FMCGs out there. Now, Gordon, I mean, mm-hmm. if I look at your business, I mean, yeah. obviously, you're going to have to grow into the market. It's at its really conceptual stages in for all intents and
yeah.
purposes.
Yeah.
What do you see your biggest challenge being in the business? I mean, you've got so many challenges. What is that biggest challenge for a new entrepreneur out there?
Well,
what can entrepreneurs learn from you?
Well, in my industry, looking at the space that we're playing in, I'd say I'd say there's a lot of counterfeit goods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with well-known brands.
You know, if you'd asked me the list of the things you could have told me, that would have been I wouldn't have even thought of that. Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
how do you compete? Eh?
Yeah, there's a lot of counterfeit products on the market.
Okay.
We don't know where they're coming from, but there is. I mean, we all know, I'm sure, about Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
They found a lot of counterfeit Grandpas on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, GSK. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that happening. I think that's going to be another a very big a challenge that we're going to face when we're trying to market or sell to the spaza shops.
Mm.
You know, but with some education through the sales guys on the ground, we'll slowly get there.
And that's interesting because as it's a big challenge for you, I also see there's a huge opportunity to almost. And I'm going to use the words carefully here because they are brand sensitive.
Mm.
Almost Intel inside this.
Mm.
So, yes, this is a GSK inside product,
mm.
i.e., it is the genuine thing that you're buying, Mr. Spaza Shop owner.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you that because I'm guaranteeing the value chain and the distribution chain from source. And we're accredited and we make sure that what gets delivered to your doorstep
mm-hmm.
is actually a grandpa, not some fake counterfeit good.
Yeah.
That's a nice value add that you're able to give the Intel inside, you know, genuine product stamp that
yeah.
many others maybe can't do.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a real interesting challenge. Sure.
Yeah.
If you look at it's also a value proposition because mm. it's also if you look at the reputation of these spaza shops, because typically what happens is when people buy products and if these products make them sick, you would find that you'll probably try them once or twice and after that you would walk away.
Mm.
But by your value proposition is saying is we will partner you with a genuine original distributor
mm.
and hopefully guarantee an element of good products.
Mm.
Well, something interesting I learned also was about the dynamics and the ecosystem around spaza shops and the community and the community engagement around spaza shops. Reputation is everything.
It's everything, yeah.
And one of my colleagues was saying that they stopped buying a certain herb because she grew up in a township
mm-hmm.
from a spaza shop because the lady didn't have it at that particular point in time.
Right.
And then they went and they found another person. But in their minds, it has stuck that this person does not have this
yeah.
and they will forevermore go and buy, even though they'll have it,
right.
They'll go to their new person and they will support that. So it's very fickle.
Uh-huh.
And the question that I have for you as well is, you know, being able to bring brands to this particular market that actually has got so much potential and there's a lot of, I mean, there's a few billion sitting there in spend.
Mm-hmm.
How price sensitive is this market, especially in the FMCG side, considering that the spaza shop owner would have had to, you know, otherwise traveled outside, go and
yeah.
purchased goods. How sensitive, what's that dynamic?
Well, with the pricing from the FMCG side, well, with the meetings that we've had or the continuing meetings that we continue to have, you know, pricing is not a problem. But the system itself, just using a new system is the problem. So the adoption on their side, yeah. But with the pricing, it hasn't been a question or a point of contention during our presentations. That has not been that. But for the spaza shop owner, obviously, yes, it is a problem. You know, like we said before, they usually go to the nearest small wholesaler
mm.
within that market, and they buy goods at a very premium price. because they don't have to travel to downtown Johannesburg or in the East Rand or to purchase goods. So they end up just taking that knock just so they can just go to their local market and get the goods back in the store and sell.
Okay. Mm. So Gordon, this is such an exciting business because it's a convergence of so many things. It's a convergence of traditional and new. It's a convergence of all the different kinds of sharing platforms.
Yeah.
What's the big vision for you? I mean, like 5-10 years from now, mm-hmm. where is Tractor and what is Tractor doing and how is Tractor impacting the landscape?
Well, we just right now we focused on selling goods from the partners that we have to the spa shop owners, and then getting that right. Once we can get that right, then we can introduce new value propositions in terms of the fintech space, like payments. We could probably discover a new way of creating payments in the market, because if it's a cash only market, and carrying cash is a problem. For the.
I want to buy shares.
It's quite interesting that the world of fintech is seen as almost this elusive thing out there that people are a little weary of and concerned about. And I must tell you, when I hear things like this, I mean, Sophie and I are both ex-bankers, and we just go like payment streams. We're looking at this, and we're going, "That's how we're going to." And interestingly, yeah. I mean, to the earlier conversation about access and ownership and all the rest, we have moved away with the fintech economy. We've moved away from this thing of you have to have an intermediary that builds trust. Okay, because that's what traditionally has happened. Payment streams where people buy and sell foreign currencies between themselves, that's a bank's nightmare, okay, and the banker's nightmare, because effectively what's happening is platforms are taking the place of positions of trust that have been there historically. And you're now in this unique position where you can bring two parties, being the sponsorship owner and the FMCG world together through what would traditionally have been you've got to sell it to a wholesaler, and the wholesaler's got to sell it, and it's got to go for cash, and it's all of these trust issues often. Mm. Fintech actually steps over the trust hurdle and makes it so, let me call it doable. I mean, I don't know if that's a word, doable, but I mean, it just makes it so possible now.
Yeah. Go for it.
So if you look at it, I mean, if you look at the sharing economy is based on, it's a collaborative consumption economy, it's a peer-to-peer, but it's fundamentally based on what they call the trust economy.
Yeah.
So if you look at Bitcoin is based on a trust economy because it's looking at bringing transparency and getting rid of that the risk that other traditional systems actually bring across.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, we've interrupted you. You're sharing your vision with us, but you can see how excited we are.
You've got four shareholders in the room.
Because this is very exciting, because this is not just traditional fintech. This is two big hurdles in the world out there. The one is the procurement hurdle, and the other one is the fintech hurdle, and it's the access hurdle. It's like all just this magical convergence.
I was going to say, I think for me, one of the critical learnings, and I've had this experience personally with clients, etc., is we need to stop thinking of fintech as the industry and start thinking of fintech as the enabler. Yeah. It's no different to how you a fintech, and I know this might sound really, really over the top, is no difference to saying I use email and Word and Excel. Okay, fintech is an enablement that enables just so much more than what we've been able to do up until now. Yeah. Now, Gordon, as we close out here, I've got one question that I always ask all entrepreneurs, and you have to answer this question for us. If you were to go back to when you started out on Tractor, okay, you've had some learnings, you've had some things, you've had some hard knocks, I'm sure, things you've learned along the way. This is your opportunity to pay it forward.
Yeah.
So what have you learnt in your experience building this world of Tractor that if you had been listening to a radio show back then would have saved you a lot of pain and time and energy and effort? It's your opportunity now to pay it forward and give that share that important nugget of information doesn't have to be very specific, just that negative information to somebody out there who's going to go through their tractor story in their own way, and you're going to help them become a better entrepreneur. What is that one thing?
Yeah, well, on top of my head, I just think vetting the people that you'll be partnering with. Vetting the people that you'll be partnering with. If you can do that in the early stages,
you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah, you know who you're dealing with, what you're dealing with.
That, and I'm seeing.
Yeah, we've been burnt. So
I'm seeing Leandi from Rose Corp going, yep, that's a critical one. Yeah. Gordon, thank you very much. Yeah, Gordon, founder of Tractor, thank you for joining us. It's been great chatting to you.
Yeah.
Kevin Governor, thank you for staying with us. Leandi, thank you for staying with us. Safia, thank you very much for your contribution. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.